Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that fuck my baths overflowed. Each week we invite a new expert to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks. And what was that?
So that tagline was courtesy of Pipsqueak 27895514.
That sounds like a bot.
Yeah.
Are the bots doing our taglines now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a ChatGPT one. It's not bad, but it is better than anything you've come up with. So, welcome to Eureka, the show that... Fuck, my bath's overflowed. It's fun to say. What are we doing today?
Well, you've just had a baby.
Famously.
So I feel like it's time I passed on my wisdom to you as a father of two.
Right.
So we are going to discuss what, according to science, it means to be a good father.
Okay. I mean, obviously, obvious point here, I've met your kids. Just bear that in mind at all times. but I will concede that you do have more experience than me of this. Yes, fine. Do you think you've done a good job?
I think I set the bar for myself quite low in that I said, I just want to be a better father than my father was.
Ah, and he was crap.
He was terrible.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, astonishingly, he was better than his father. So we're sort of going down the line, really.
But steadily improving.
So my father famously left when I was one, and we met again when I was...
Sick of you already.
it took him 11 months, basically.
Yeah, like, no.
We met when I was 21, as I'm sure I've told you. But the thing was that he got in touch with me and said, you know, shall we meet up? Sort of absolutely out of the blue, which I thought was amazing and brilliant. And like, you know, he was, you know, it was all going to be restored. And then like subsequently, I mean, we'd get on absolutely fine. We'd get on quite well. And, but I did find out down the line that he actually got in touch with me because he was in therapy and his therapist had instructed him to sort of get in touch with everyone that he'd wronged in his life. So, you know, for me, it was like, oh, amazing, like, you know, reunion, it's all going to be great. And for him, it was just like a checklist.
Yeah, just so he'd go into his next therapy session and be like, yeah, I got in touch with him.
Yeah, yeah.
You get off my back now.
But, I mean, he didn't have a great parenting model, a fathering model, because his father also left when he was pretty young. And one of the things my father said to me was, well, I did pay all the child maintenance that I had to pay, which, again, quite a low bar. But his father didn't. So his father, when he got divorced from my grandmother, they went to court. My grandfather was a Freemason and so was the judge. And there was a kind of nod and a wink and a funny handshake, and he didn't have to pay any child maintenance.
Wow.
So so basically my father grew up really, like, they were massively struggling, like absolute poverty, because of the good old Freemasons.
Yeah. So what we're saying is you're from a lineage of terrible fathers.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have...
I think
you
I've
are
smashed
an improvement.
It. I mean, by those standards, I've smashed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you have actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
Yeah. So lots to impart.
Fantastic. We all have an idea of what a great father should be. Maybe he's strong yet gentle. Maybe he's playful yet firm. Maybe he's the one who tells the best bedtime stories.
Stickman lives in the family tree.
Maybe he's the one who's always there with a listening ear.
Dad, can I talk to you about something? But is being a good parent something that's innate? Is it something that could be learned? Or is it something that's shaped by culture, society, and personal experience? Some argue that a great father is someone who provides for his family, the breadwinner, the protector.
Daddy.
Others believe that a great father is someone who nurtures his children, the caregiver, the emotional support.
Come here. Come here, sweetheart.
And what about the importance of fathers in a child's development? How do fathers impact their children's lives in ways that mothers may not? And how does the relationship between father and child affect the child's overall well-being? As a new sleep-deprived parent myself, I'm very keen to know the answer to this week's question: what makes a great father?
Boring.
You'll be
pleased.
Please don't tell me you're not the expert.
I would have quit on the spot.
No, we've got Dr.
Your dad.
Can I introduce you to my granddad?
From the grave, presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah, this week, the expert, well, we're joined via seance.
We are joined by Dr. Anna Machin, who is an evolutionary anthropologist. She studies the neuroscience of parenthood, and she is the author of a book which I have bought for you.
Oh, lovely stuff.
Here you go. Life of Dad, The Making of a Modern Father.
Well, thank you.
Obviously, I've been through it. I put notes in all the bits I recommend and put on my own.
And scribble some stuff out. No, that's not right.
Don't worry about that.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, thank you.
So that's the story of fatherhood and what it means to be a father today.
Couldn't have got a sign for me, no? Okay. Yeah. And what am I doing? Am I reading it now or are we...
I think we'll get on with the podcast, shall we?
Yeah, okay. What did you ask her first?
So I got her to tell us how the role of fathers has evolved through human history.
So humans are quite an unusual mammal because we have investing fathers, and only 5% of mammals actually have investing fathers that stick around. And we are the only apes, so it's very, very rare. And so the question arises, why did it evolve in our line? Because generally it's not something that happens. And the reason for that is a combination of two things. We're bipedal, which means we have a very narrowed birth canal and we have enormous brains. So our brains are 6 times bigger than they should be for a mammal of our size. And because of that, we have to birth our babies much earlier than they should be birthed just to try and fit the brain through the birth canal. And for about the first 1 million years of that happening, the way we dealt with these very dependent babies was to turn to our female kin. And female kin helped each other to raise their children. But about 500,000 years ago, our brains took another massive leap in size, and suddenly that kind of girl power grouping together was not enough. And so we had to turn to the next genetically related person, and that was dad. So about 500,000 years ago, human fatherhood evolved, and we needed fathers to step in to make sure that those babies survived. So the evolutionary story, it's so rare because we have these two anatomical quirks, which have meant that we had to have it in our line.
So I feel like I'm very much learning on the job as far as fatherhood goes.
Yeah.
But I do know a bit of biology already. So if you look at the animal kingdom, fatherhood tends to be, if anything, a sort of caretaker role. So in primates, you know, things like, if you look at like a tamarin or whatever, the males carry the baby. So it's kind of quite a practical role,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Are human fathers the only species that take on more developmental roles as well as the practical stuff?
Well, since doing my research for this podcast, I've discovered yes, but I think previously I would have said, no, I was just like a tamarin,
yeah.
Just like picking up the slack, basically, when Philippa was just like absolutely ground into the dirt.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'll take them out to the park and I'll do this. And but, you know, from what I understand of what Anna's found, that actually human children have to go into such a sort of complex life sort of story as they're going in, that actually there's a lot more work that needs to be done than can be done by just, you know, one parent. So humans have a sort of special thing, like they've got a super big brain, which means that we have got a super complex environment and lots to explore as we sort of grow up into it. It's a huge world out there. And the father's job, according to Anna's research, really is to prepare the child for that sort of super complex world out there, rather than just like, you know, picking up the slack, carrying it on the back kind of thing, and just doing the sort of very much the practical sort of needs to be done kind of stuff. So it's a whole extra role that I didn't know that I was supposed to be doing. So I'm slightly irritated. Yeah.
This is good for me, though.
This is good for you because you get to know in advance.
My role is expanding quite significantly.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's fine, I suppose.
Yeah.
Have fathers become more involved as society has become more complex then?
So what she's found, and we'll kind of get more into this later on, is that it's very culture dependent. It depends on what environment you're in, what role the father has to play. But the bottom line is that human fatherhood is focused on, when it's done right, and I'm not saying I did it right, this is really, I undermined my confidence, this whole thing.
I was so smug going into this,
and now I sort of feel like, I sort of feel like I need to start again, but the kids aren't up for that now, apparently. I did ask them, should we go to the park?
I thought you meant start again, as in...
Oh, it's like a whole new baby. Family.
I don't know. I think just they've been there.
I'm not there for that. You know. So one of the things is like one of the basic things about fatherhood apparently is doing things like rough and tumble play. So that kind of, which is surprising, isn't it? To me, it was surprising.
It's definitely. I mean, I can't be doing that now.
No, obviously not yet.
Yeah.
So you know this is coming.
The boy is tiny.
Well, it's funny you say.
Although
that.
He's quite sort of wriggly. Like I feel like he wouldn't, and they're quite strong.
I mean, we had this once with Philippa's brother, who was like playing with Millie when she was really small, and like doing a bit of rough and tumble, and like doing that thing where you swing them around in a circle.
Oh, yeah.
Dislocated her elbow.
Perfect.
I had to take her to hospital, and
presumably the nurses and the doctors all thought you'd done it.
Yeah. Honestly, there's been a few occasions when I've been asked quite penetrating questions about how this injury happened.
Mm.
But anyway, so it's all about sort of, because that kind of play, sort of, you know, which involves sort of risk, there's a bit of risk involved, there's reciprocity, it's sort of social interaction, it teaches you in a very safe way how to read other people's sort of signs and all this kind of stuff. And understand empathy and turn-taking and all of this kind of stuff is like, you know, it's very much in every society the role of the father. The mother doesn't do it so much.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is a way to sort of scaffold the child's entry into the wider world beyond the family. This is not something you have to sort of really sort of worry about just yet, I guess.
But this is what's
coming for you, and this is what you've actually got to almost put aside time to do, which is really interesting.
So here's something that I was genuinely, I don't know if I would say I was worried about it, but it definitely had occurred to me, and so I read some stuff about it, which is that the bond between mother and baby under normal circumstances is pretty immediate. And it's all sort of, you know, and you can kind of figure out why, sort of hormonal, physical, like it's just all there, isn't
it?
And that isn't necessarily the case with fathers. And I was like, oh, what happens if he...
So have you actually worried about that?
What happens? Basically, I was like, what happens if he comes out and I don't really feel anything?
Oh, yeah. That is classic.
I was sort of quite anxious about that. As it happened, it was like, for me, I think maybe I just got lucky and immediately came out. I was like, oh, this guy. I love this guy. Yeah,
the narcissistic part of you, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, maybe.
It's like, this one's mine.
But I was, straight from the bat, like, I love this little man.
Oh, that's really good. I read there's four recognised stages to becoming a father.
Not for me.
The first one, and I think we've talked about this one, the first one is the trigger moment when the reality that you're going to have a baby.
Right,
lands.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that.
Yes.
And I think that, I remember us talking about that.
Yeah.
Then there's an awareness of responsibility stage when the implications of becoming a father begin to basically take shape in your mind and you start to think, I am responsible for this one. This child is not going to be like
that.
Well,
it completely informs like every decision already.
Yeah.
Because it has to.
And then there's the transition to fatherhood stage when basically your identity as a father sort of starts to sort of become like, this is what I am now.
Yeah.
I guess that's where it's informing all the decisions at that point.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one is the emotional conflict, which is the evolution and processing of all the competing emotions and desires and thoughts and expectations. It's like you don't know what to expect, what's coming, how to react. Maybe you're not at that yet.
No, maybe not. I'm fairly sort of, I feel quite focused on him as being my sort of primary, motivator.
So there's no sort of sense of conflict yet, really.
Not at the moment, no. I'm just like, I want him to be happy. How am I going to make that happen?
Yeah, that's good. That's interesting because actually, the bonding thing is a real concern, Anna talks about that sort of quite quite openly as being like something that's easier for mums in that, you know, it's chemically triggered, but for dads it's not, and it's just something that you have to wait for, as she explained.
Oxytocin is one of the bonding hormones that underpins human bonding generally, and we see increases in it in both mothers and fathers when they become mothers and fathers. The difference for mums and dads is mums kind of get a head start because oxytocin is actually involved in childbirth and breastfeeding. It underpins the start of uterine contractions during childbirth, and it also is involved in the letdown of milk. So mums get this kind of side effect of going through those processes, which gives them a head start in the bonding stakes, and it does. Fathers have to build their bonds with their children because they don't go through those massive physiological changes through interaction. And they do that by touch, by play, by singing with the children, that kind of thing. But the trouble, because they do it through interaction, it can take longer for a father to bond because babies in the early stages don't do very much. So getting that lovely reciprocal give and take is quite hard. And we know of a delay in bonding sometimes with fathers. Whilst they do feel a bond when their baby's born, it's generally based upon genetic recognition of, okay, this is my baby and I love it. And it's quite a cognitive conscious thing. 6 months down the line, when the baby is developmentally advanced enough for there to be reciprocity, for there to be play, to be all this recognition of different personalities, we see a much deeper bond, sort of a second stage of bonding. And that's very much based on neurochemistry and the release of things like oxytocin and dopamine and beta endorphins. So what I always say to fathers who can sometimes worry that maybe they don't feel they're bonding in the same way that their partner is that, you know, don't panic. It's a well-known phenomenon, and that bond will come.
Yeah, the panic I'm getting from that is not that I'm not sufficiently bonded. It's that it doesn't feel like I've got anywhere to go if it's going to ramp up.
Oh, really?
And like, my little head's going to explode.
Because your brain is already changing. Like, there's recognised changes in the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex with just becoming a father. Mm. And over the next 6 months, what's going to build up is that oxytocin thing.
Ooh.
Where you are going to basically
explode. This is going to be fucking
intense. Yeah. Intense is probably the word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So if you're already sort of feeling it, and you're going to be doing all that sort of, you know, the playing and the singing and all the kind of, you know, interaction that goes on, and that's going to get more and more reciprocal action as your baby develops. And so you're going to get more and more oxytocin. And you can actually get, they've done experiments where they just give new father's nasal spray of oxytocin, which sort of accelerates the whole process.
Don't think I need that.
No, I think you should stay away from nasal sprays of oxytocin.
Yeah. I read the boy, The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, yeah.
Last night. And it was interesting. It went quite well in that he was definitely looking at the book as I was reading it and sort of reasonably captive.
Yeah.
I was pointing at the various things that the caterpillar was eating through. Don't know how well you remember the book. It's a great book. I mean,
it is a great book.
Caterpillar wakes up, eats his way through, you know, one apple, then two pears, and then three, just holds all the way through. Lovely. But then wakes up like a very fat caterpillar. It's huge.
Yeah.
And as soon as we opened a page with a very fat caterpillar, he was like, no, and started crying.
I really
hated it. To the extent that I barely managed to finish the book.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Maybe he didn't like the idea that the caterpillar was getting body shamed. I don't know. It's very odd. He was completely happy and then really completely unhappy.
I think you can relax in that just that process of interaction will be just part of the kind of the brain reward, the dopamines. Yeah. I mean, you're getting stuff out of it, even if he isn't.
Look, I mean, well, what I've said to him is, we're reading that book again tonight, and you're going to get past that. We're going to get past this.
Have you read him any of my books yet?
Not yet. No. Because he's actually sleeping all right. So don't need any.
It's so funny, like, researching this stuff. And you read all these, like, I've been reading papers and, like, looking. And in the end, it does come down to, like, you know, play with your kid kind of thing.
Yeah.
And interact with your child. And you sort of read these brain studies. And I'll quote from one of them. It says, Stronger father-infant bonding was reported by dads with greater MPFC, precocious, and superior parietal lobe connectivity. Importantly, increased supportive and positive parenting behavior was correlated again with MPFC and LOC connectivity. This is important because it suggests that these brain regions are not only important for empathy and perspective taking, but also tie in with motivational systems and subsequent behavioral outcomes. So what are you meant to do with that? It's like, be a good dad is effectively like, you know, just be a good dad and all this stuff will happen in your brain.
But it's not like
you can go in and say, oh, we can bypass this or we can shortcut. Oh, we've seen what's happening with the brain mechanism. So we'll just give you a zap and sort that out. So I sort of feel a bit like, you know, this kind of area of research is sort of interesting, but not very useful.
Not very helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, because all it can tell you is what sort of behaviours might promote the things that they're seeing.
Yeah.
That's it.
And there's a sort of worry that, like, one day they're going to develop brain scans that will tell you, like, no, you're not going to be a very good dad.
Yeah, no. Oh, dear.
Or the connectivity's terrible.
Not with
there.
That brain, I'm afraid. Yeah.
It's sort of quite, I don't know, I find it a little bit worrying because this is obviously something we've evolved to do. Mm. And, you know, not everyone evolves, I guess, in the same way that it makes them a good dad or not. And I guess, you know, we can get onto that. But it sort of feels like, yeah, it's quite basic in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That kind of is interaction and time.
Well, I'm taking a sort of a position that is, I speak to the baby as if the baby can understand everything already, which I know is not the case, but I'm like, well, this is the policy. That's just what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so when I'm changing him, I'm like, okay, now, yeah, left arm out now. Yeah, thank you. Now get your right arm out and lift your legs up, please. No, don't kick. Lift your legs up, all that kind of stuff. And he obviously just sort of absolutely blank. Hasn't got a fucking clue what's going on. but I'm still, you know, going through the motions.
Yeah.
I chat to him a lot.
And his first word's going to be octopus, isn't it?
Well, it better be. It's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah.
Okay, time for a quick break. When we get back, we'll discuss the role of testosterone in fatherhood, the benefits of having a good present father to a child, and we'll be answering today's question, what makes a good father?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back. So is my brain changing then?
Just by doing this. And it will change because you've got this new bond that's developing, and the oxytocin hasn't properly kicked in yet, and it will start to kick in sort of over the next few months. And also your body's changing because of you're basically getting a hormone sort of change going on right now.
What's happening to me?
Your testosterone's catastrophically dropping.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that? Is that useful in evolutionary terms, in terms of keeping me sticking around?
Yeah.
That?
Yeah.
So basically, I'm less horny?
I'll let Anna explain it.
The lowering in testosterone is important, and it's something that happens in all creatures where we say investing fathers. So whether you're a bird, whether you're a mammal, you will see this drop in testosterone males. And it's important because it switches the motivation of the male from mating, where high testosterone is really important, makes you much more successful, to parenting. Because we need your attention when you become a parent to be on the family, not on the horizon looking for the next mate, basically. So that drop in testosterone is important. Also, we know men with high testosterone are much less likely to be motivated to care for their offspring. So if we need an investing father, we need to get rid of some of that testosterone to make sure that he's motivated to care for his offspring. They tend to be much more empathetic, and they tend to produce much more profound and healthy, secure attachments to their children. So that drop in testosterone is really important.
Very interested to know what kind of testosterone level your dad and granddad had.
Well, so interesting studies that show that basically fatherless sons have higher levels of testosterone than those with fathers around. So nobody knows whether that's a genetic
whether
link,
they've inherited that.
Yeah. Or whether it's because the father wasn't around, somehow the sort of pathways involved have just meant that you have an elevated level of testosterone.
Could be both.
Yeah, fairness, it could be both. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really, really difficult. Nobody knows how to separate the two.
No.
But it could be that there's a sort of pathway where uncertain times means you keep your testosterone high, and the absence of a father sort of is an indicator of uncertain times.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of, you know, it's something like 16% different, basically, if you grow up without a father in your family home, in your unit. Your testosterone would be about 16% higher than somebody who has a father around.
So you're going to be packing some testosterone.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? But I'm not sure I ever was.
I would never have said that. I wouldn't have guessed that. Is there any downside to having low testosterone?
Yes, there are. And we know that low testosterone is a precursor or can open the door to depression.
So fantastic.
So like basically any kind of drop in testosterone has been linked with depression, and people who get testosterone therapy, more in the US where it's easier to do than in the UK, they report like symptoms of depression alleviating just through having testosterone supplementation. So your drop in testosterone does leave you more open to getting vulnerable. A kind of postnatal depression. Mm. And actually, it's in women, postnatal depression is about 14%. Incidence. Mm-hmm. And in men it's about 10%, so it's not that different,
is it?
Yeah it's not that different.
You don't hear about it particularly.
Well, you don't hear about it partly because men don't talk about it. So one of the things that Anna has always sort of tried to push is the idea that we need to talk to dads and find out how dads are doing, because actually they are going through, and they're also going through stresses in terms of, you know, lack of sleep and changed identity as well, which, you know, can be a precursor to
lack of sleep, you say.
I mean, it's hard to imagine your sleep getting any worse.
It's ringing a bell. Yeah.
So do you think your sleep has got worse or not changed actually?
Oh, it's loads worse.
Is it?
It's so
I'm so
much
sorry
worse.
To hear that, he says laughing.
It's so much worse. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I kind of right. thought with your, you know, getting up at 3:30 in the morning, it might not actually make a lot of difference.
No, it's just another layer of it being fucking awful. It just in terms of the sleep.
Yeah. Okay, so you say obviously sleep deprivation is not great and sort of opens you up for, you know, feelings of depression as well.
Oh, good.
So... But, you know, let's keep talking about it, yeah, so you'll be fine.
The thing that I want to know then, if I'm, you know, suddenly sort of opening myself up to get depressed,
yeah,
is it worth the effort? Like, is it worth being a good dad? Does it? Do we know that it has a positive impact on the child? Seems like a sort of statement of the obvious, but I wonder if we do know that.
That's,
for sure.
It's a really good question, and we there is so much research that says having a present, active father has massive outcomes, like incredible improved outcomes for the life of the child, which is amazing how far I've got in life, to be honest.
Yeah, think what you would have done.
I mean, I might have been prime minister by now.
Yeah, terrible thought.
But yeah, so we do know that having a father around has a really positive impact. That's something that Anna talked about.
This is a really political area as to whether fathers add something or not. I think, first of all, we need to define what a father is. A father is not necessarily the biological parent of a child, and they're not necessarily involved in conception. So they may be biologically related, they may be an uncle, a grandfather, a brother, whoever it might be. Human fatherhood is highly flexible, and it's highly flexible because of the requirement for a child to have a father to make sure that it gets the most successful development as it can possibly get. So when we look around the world, as an anthropologist, I don't just study fatherhood in this country, I study it around the world, and we see many different men stepping up to be fathers. We might even get whole teams of men stepping up to fathers. So first of all, we have to be very clear about what we talk about when we talk about fathers. Fathers are not about genetic relatedness, they're about who steps up and does the role. When we see a child who's got some form of father in their life, then they tend to be much more successful in terms of entering the world beyond the family. They tend to have much more success in, for example, correct behaviours, emotional development, emotional inhibition, things like that. They tend to be much better at what we call pro-social behaviours, so that's sharing, caring, helping out behaviours. As adolescents, they tend to have much more mental resilience, so they're much less likely to suffer things like depression or anxiety, low self-esteem or loneliness. And there's a lot of data now showing us that having that male figure in your life is very, very important, but it does not have to be the biological parent of that child.
So effectively, you...
I could farm it out. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be you.
I don't want to do that, but it's interesting to know it's an option.
If there's one take home from this podcast... Yeah.
But presumably...
I mean, on the plus side as well, by the way, if you lose contact with your child, your testosterone comes back.
Bang! Yeah, I'm back in business, baby.
It comes back to pre-birth levels.
But I'm not getting the oxytocin.
No, there is that, yeah.
There must be. I'm going to be losing out on stuff, and presumably the bonding that the child has is going to be with the this caregiver that I've bought in.
There is that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that?
I don't want to do that.
Have you talked to my father about this? He seems quite happy to have done it.
Well, in fairness, I don't think he arranged someone to step in, did he?
No, he didn't arrange someone to step in, but yeah.
He just arranged for himself to step out. That's slightly different. You don't have to answer this. When you were growing up, did you think, where's that guy?
Did you all the time.
Feel like you missed him?
No.
That you missed him, because I guess you didn't really know him.
I didn't know who he was, and I wanted to know who he was.
Did you feel the absence?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Definitely. And I had a stepfather who, in my recollection, wasn't great. Was, you know, in fact, far from it.
Right.
But I don't have any recollection of my early years. So it may well be that he actually stepped up and did a lot of the stuff that needed to be done when I was young, because he came in on the scene when I was like maybe two or three, like really young. So I grew up with him sort of doing
so
that father role in a sense.
But he didn't feel like the father to
No.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because you would have thought it, coming in that young, it might have...
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of stepdads who obviously have a fantastic
relationship. Well, I think I must have had some kind of good relationship with him because, for instance... He was a Leeds United fan. I've told you this.
Yeah.
And I spent my sort of formative years, like from about five to about 8 years old, always wearing a Leeds United kit.
Mm.
You know, so there must have been some influence kind of, you know, whether that was him sort of imposing something, but obviously there was some kind of bonding going on there for that to happen. But I can't remember much. I actually asked my kids yesterday, as part of my research for this, like whether they can remember me taking them to the park all the time. Because I'm convinced that I used to do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of getting the kids out of the house, taking them to the park, doing all this kind of stuff. Mm. So I sent a message to Millie and Nova.
I'm pretty sure, by the way, that in every case, the mums are doing heavy lifting.
My recollection is on that play front.
Okay.
You know, I remember taking them on bike rides on the downs. Mm-hmm. I remember making them cry because I made them cycle too far.
Oh, that's good.
That's one of my nice
character
memories.
Building. Yeah.
Anyway, so I sort of messaged them yesterday saying, do you remember that like when I did stuff on my own with you more than mum did stuff on her own with you?
Can I guess the answer?
Millie just said, this sounds like a trap.
Yeah. But did they remember?
No. They have no memory or nothing they're willing to share. So then I asked my in-laws, because I thought they might back me up, but no, they said they can't remember either. So everyone's just like saying, can't remember. But my memory is that I spent a lot of time in playgrounds with my kids.
So now the question is this a false memory from
you? Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Philippa would tell you it is.
Yeah, but I don't know if she's a reliable narrator. And then the question is, does it matter that they can't remember consciously, because it will have still had
it
some
will have
sort
still
of
had
formative
that,
effect?
Yeah, it will have still had that effect. So
actually, I'm not sure that the explicit recall is I mean, it would be nice for you.
It would be nice to have some validation.
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessary for it to have had a positive effect.
No. But there's good evidence that basically if you get involved as a father, you get you become more empathetic yourself, but also your children become more empathetic and are better at regulating emotions, better at managing mental health issues. And also you get to continue being involved as they get older. So that investment when your kids are young tends to lead to you having a kind of continued relationship with them as they grow up. Which is actually, quite a big thing.
Mm. Did you? So I'm really having to fight this, and I feel like you might be the only other person I know who might be fighting a similar urge or might have fought a similar urge. So have you read, I think it was in, it was probably in like a Freakonomics or something like that, where they talk about the guy who wanted to create chess grandmasters. You read that?
No.
Okay, so he's Eastern European. He's not particularly good at chess, but for some reason, he gets it in his head that he can definitely, through nurture, create children that are amazing at chess.
Oh.
And you're like, interesting. He puts an advert in like a local newspaper basically saying, listen, I want to try and do this, but I need, a partner who's going to be willing to do it with me. And you know, get in touch.
Oh wait, he hasn't married or got
no,
a partner
no, no,
or
no,
anything.
No, he's just thought I'm gonna do this. So he's gone in with a plan, and someone goes, yeah, go on then. He has kids, two or three girls. From when they're really young, he's getting them to like play with chess pieces, not as in they obviously don't know how to play chess.
Just habituating them.
And then he teaches them the rules of chess as soon as he can. He gets them to play it. They love it. They start to get really good. Like, he is not a good, he's not a good chess player.
Yeah.
I think maybe his wife is quite good. I can't remember. The sort of, long story short, two or three, however many he has, all of them become chess grandmasters.
Oh, I love it.
Which is like, one of them... Is like the only person who've ever beaten so-and-so, luminary in the chess world.
Yeah.
It's mad that you kind of go, what? How? Like, and it might just, I mean, you have to entertain the idea that this is just a sort of mad confirmation bias where it just happens. But it feels like
it feels doable.
So my thing is, that puts quite a lot of pressure on, because you're like, hold on a minute, I could be doing some stuff here to get
it. Right, you're already missing the mark, aren't you? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're weeks in now.
Yeah, no, I know. And so one of the funny things was when he was born, he was immediately, like, as you'd expect, because Ema's tall and I'm tall, he was very long.
Right.
And the nurses...
Which Olympics are you aiming for?
Yeah, the nurses were like, he didn't have a name at the time, so he was just called Kenny Boy. that's Ema's surname. Yeah, yeah. So just Kenny Boy. And so nurses would be like, Kenny Boy. Oh, Kenny Boy is going to be in the NBA. Kenny Boy is going to be in the NBA because he's so long. And now in my head, I'm like, am I just going to get some little sponge basketballs and just sort of drop them around the place, start suggesting the idea? Because
there's no harm in it.
The thought of him being in the NBA is fantastic. I love it. I absolutely love it. But then I also don't want to be in a position where I'm effectively sort of running an experiment on my child.
I don't think you have to see it like that.
No.
I think you can sort of encourage down that pathway. You can open the pathway up
and see if he's up for it. Yeah, yeah. I think that's it, isn't it? You have to force him
into it. But he might find himself to be actually a good with the ball, good hand-eye coordination. Yeah. Yeah. That's quite feasible. And if he's tall, then great. Yeah. You know, he's going to be probably good at basketball. And there are worse things in life than being good at basketball,
There really are. Yeah. So, okay, I'm ordering the spongy basketballs.
You should definitely do it. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen is that he doesn't like basketball.
And I stop getting basketball and you're disappointed.
That's all. Yeah.
But also not that disappointed.
And if you hide the disappointment, it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, don't tell him you're disappointed.
Yeah. He's like, do you mind if I don't go to basketball practice? I'm like, no.
That will happen. Huh? Yeah, yeah.
That is completely fine.
Yeah.
I'm glad I put that net up on the wall.
The amazing thing is, like, Anna's research, she's found that actually every culture she's been around, like, dads have this role of, you know, opening up pathways into the sort of, you know, quite often it's economic pathways. So they'll see themselves as in Western society as, like, you know, making sure you get into the best schools. Dads sort of, you know, arrange internships and, you know, try and sort of, you know, smooth the passage. If you're in a society or a culture where actually just survival is pretty hard, then the dad's role is to ensure survival, you know, keep that kid alive effectively. Mm. There might be another sort of culture where, you know, the important thing is to open up an economic opportunity. So, you find dads taking kids to markets and sort of showing them how the market works and maybe introducing them to people who run, you know, the market stalls. And so what she's found is that, you know, dads seem to have this role of, you know, doing the play, doing lots of interaction and bonding that way, sort of developing that emotional resilience, the social cues, understanding how to read other people, how to interact with other people, and then helping them to take those skills and just sort of setting them on the path into the world.
Is this true for father-son and father-daughter relationships?
Yeah, it is. And father-daughter relationships are sort of slightly different in other ways, but
there's still that consistent
sort of, this is the role of a father, basically. So, you know, there's there's sort of, it's not rocket science in a way.
No, but
people are doing
it
naturally.
It's cross-cultural, though, isn't it?
I quite like the idea of let's explicitly aim, this is what you do as a dad, and this is what a good dad does. And if you do that, then you will open up, you know, your kid to a positive experience of life and being able to handle a lot more stuff that's thrown at them.
I suppose my question really is...
I feel like I wish I'd known this 20 years ago.
Yeah, I bet your kids wish they'd known it as well. But I feel like there's nothing that we've really said that means that it is the dad that has to do this. You could just as well switch roles.
You could.
With the mother.
Like, and I'm sure that's possible. And I'm sure it's sort of... But if you don't have a dad around, we are seeing like negatives.
Yeah.
In kids' lives.
But would you... Okay, so...
I shouldn't say a dad. Another person, basically.
That's sort of what I mean is, like, there's going to be far fewer examples of this to study, but presumably the mother not being there creates all sorts of problems
definitely. I mean, it is complicated, and obviously this is not a one-size-fits-all.
No.
And, you know, I guess what, in effect, she's saying is that when you have two parents bringing up a child, you get to sort of round out a lot of all the stuff that's really needed for, you know, success and thriving.
Okay, so the question, what makes a good father? Should we hear what Anna had to say first?
Yeah.
A great father is somebody who takes the time to really get to know his child and who plays with his child, because play, particularly rough and tumble play, is the biggest way you can create a strong bond and input into your child's development.
I can do that.
I mean, it's not asking a lot, is it?
I can do that. That's no problem.
And yet I'm already feeling like, I'm not sure I did enough of that.
I bet you did.
I think I probably did.
It's sort of, I find it quite hard to resist. I mean, I'm not...
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, at the boy's age, like I say, basically doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's particularly sort of begging for me to play with him, but I'm still having a go.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's good. I mean, that's all you need to do then.
Yeah.
You can go tell Ema, my only role...
It turns out I'm actually smashing this, Ema. So you can keep your criticisms to yourself.
And she didn't say anything about changing nappies.
No, but I actually quite like that.
Do you? Yeah.
Well, it makes me feel like, because I do think it is possible as a father to feel a bit like a spare part.
I think that's
true. There's lots of stuff that you just can't do.
Yeah.
Sort of physically. Certainly if the baby is breastfeeding, you're like, well, okay.
Also, I mean, did you read as much as Ema did about sort of how to look after a young baby? Did you let her read the books, or did you read the books as well?
I think I read more books.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I didn't.
But then there's some really good ones. Like now, like Expecting Better would be to anyone, if anyone is listening and you are on the pregnancy journey in any way, Expecting Better by, I can't remember her name. She's also written a sort of follow-up called Crib Sheet that's good for once the kid is born, but Expecting Better is all about pregnancy. It's fantastic. She's an economist and she's married to an economist. And so she thinks about everything in a very specific way. And effectively just analyzes loads of data and studies and tells you what's important and what isn't.
Emily Oster.
Emily Oster. That's her, yeah. And I highly recommend it, because it's stuff like, you get really panicked about, oh my God, if I do this, is it going to adversely affect the child's development?
Yeah.
Both when it, in womb and out. And there's so much crap out there. Like, so much crap out there. Not as in the atmosphere, although that is also true. But just sort of online and in sort of old wives' tales and all this kind of stuff. And it cuts through that really, really well. I found it really useful, and Ema found it really useful that I'd sort of read it so I could be like, no, you genuinely don't need to worry about that. Or yes, no, we should avoid that, or whatever.
That's great.
Or do this. That was the best thing I read. But I read quite a few. The things that I struggle with are the sleep books, because it's like a huge industry as you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Everyone basically says different stuff. Yeah, you're like, well, yeah. This is...
And they all say, oh, science says this. And then somebody else will say, science says something else.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, right. Brilliant.
And now you've got Anna's book, The Life of Dad, which means...
I'm interested.
Which means that you basically, you know, your takeaway from that is I need to do more rough and tumble play.
Yeah, with Ema. I mean, look at this. I was already looking forward to this. And I see one of the quotes on the back is from your friend of mine, Robin Dunbar.
Yeah.
That's lovely stuff.
He's like a demigod to you, isn't he, Robin Dunbar?
He is, actually. Yeah.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Dr. Anna Machin. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london. Or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.